This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and as always, the early week editions joined by Adam Burke. Just a reminder, now three episodes a week, Wednesdays with Wes, first episode last week, Wes Reynolds, and then the breakdown of the card with Matt Eumanns later on this week. We've got a lot going on at VSiN as we just celebrated the Sports Equinox on Monday. We've got a new app. So Adam is always in tune with what we've got going on over at VSiN.com. So let the people know what we got going on, Adam, before we rock and roll into week 10 of the college football season.
Well, let's start with the college sports theme because college basketball season starts in 6 days. Woo-hoo. So head over to VSiN.com, get your college basketball betting guide, 133 pages to get you ready for the season. And it's a tough guide, right? With the transfer portal, it's very, very hard to keep track of everything, but we did that work for you. So head over to VSiN.com and get that. Only way to get that is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. You mentioned the Sports Equinox, $120 VSiN Pro subscription through May 1st, less than $20 a month with our Sports Equinox special. So you can get your hands on that college basketball guide that way, not to mention everything else that we're working on. And as you mentioned, the VSiN Watch app. So this is completely free through November 25th. When it's not free, you can still listen to a VSiN live stream. But if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you can still watch through the VSiN Watch app. So another good reason to become a VSiN Pro subscriber over there at the website.
Got a whole lot going on, plus all the content that comes out throughout the weeks, including Adam's updated power ratings article, which we'll touch on certainly through the show today. A bunch of things I wanted to hit on, and I've been keeping track over the last couple of weeks on the Heisman market, the G5 odds to make the college football playoff. But I wanted to start here, which is after Texas beats Vanderbilt by three, shouts to the Commodores, now 5-0 ATS as an underdog this year. Ohio State, your boys, come back and beat Nebraska 21-17. Someone has to win the national championship. That is a fact. That is a rule. There will be a national champion this year. We've got Ohio State, Penn State coming up on Saturday. Questions about the health of Drew Aller. Questions about who will play left tackle for Ohio State. When we look at the national championship race right now, Adam, Georgia is the favorite at plus 340, but that's not overwhelming. They've shown some warts. They've got a loss on the year. Who do we trust? Or is there no one that we trust? And we believe that this thing could be wide open once it all starts on Friday, December 20th.
Well, look, I mean, I certainly think it can be wide open, especially with what we've seen here so far this season. And the fact that, you know, I mean, what do we do with the Big 12, right? I mean, do we want to count the Big 12 out of this thing? Because
I don't know. I've been trying to get bet against BYU the last, like, 3 weeks. Now, I did get home at least 2 weeks ago with the Pokes of Oklahoma State. But, boy, I got hoodwinked into the line move, got a good number, and that was not really all that competitive against UCF. So is it the time we start to say BYU's, I don't want to say for real, but you've got Iowa State's undefeated. BYU, you look at their schedule, they should be, emphasis on should, 12-0 going into the Big 12 championship game. But yeah, the Big 12, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we keep crapping on it as a conference, but they've got a couple of unbeatens there. And Kansas State has got one loss. I don't know what to do with the Big 12.
So BYU, for me, 8-point favorite against Utah next week in the Holy War. They are on a bye this week. Kansas, 8-point favorite. Arizona State, 5.5-point road favorite, assuming Sam Levitt's able to play. And then Houston, a 17.5-point favorite. So they're favored in all four games and, you know, pretty clearly at that. But do we really expect BYU to beat, you know, even one of the top four teams? I mean, I guess, you know, SMU, they've kind of proven that already, although that was a really, really ugly football game. Can any of those Big 12 teams beat even an ACC team where I don't know that that conference is very good this season, let alone trying to beat, you know, an Ohio State, an Oregon, a Penn State, an Indiana, maybe Indiana. No offense, Hoosiers. But, like, anybody from the SEC, do we really expect BYU to beat them? So
I don't, but once again,
here's the point I'm making, right? We're crossing off a conference, yep. right? I mean, stranger things have happened, but we're crossing off a conference, right? So I don't think anybody from the Big 12 can win the national championship.
No G5 can win it.
No G5 can win it. Clemson? I don't know. I mean,
it's hard to tell because the one data point that we have of Clemson is a neutral site against Georgia, and they got absolutely dump trucked. Now
in the second half.
And now since then, yeah, the defense played well in
the first half. It was what, 3-0?
Yeah, 3-0. I think at halftime.
Yeah, so, or 6-0. So
and then Miami is. They've got arguably the most dynamic quarterback in the country who can do incredibly special things and also do incredibly, at times, boneheaded things as well.
They've also given up 34-plus points in 3 ACC games.
That is
so,
correct.
You know, what happens with this defense when they step up in class a little bit? So I think you cross off the ACC, right? So the ACC and the Big 12 are gone. No offense, Tim. I don't think Notre Dame can win it.
Oh, none taken.
At full strength,
I think Notre Dame maybe could have made the semis, but they're missing their best player in Benjamin Morrison, edge rushers, left tackle. So Notre Dame's not winning the title.
So you're not in two conferences, right? You're not in the SEC and the Big Ten.
Indiana can win the title. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. So you're not in two conferences, right? The SEC and the Big Ten. And only one team from each of those conferences is going to get a bye.
Yep.
So you're going to run into a situation where you have to play really, really good teams in theory, what, 3 games in a row to win this thing? So, 4 games in a row? Whatever it would be.
And the path is going to be, you know, we talk so much about it for college basketball, and I didn't think that we would necessarily have this case out there, but the path becomes really fascinating where I feel like the team who gets the 5th seed is really, and I'm not saying it all depends on where the 5th seed, let's say, for example, Georgia goes 11-1, but based off of tiebreakers, doesn't get into the SEC championship. So then they would be the 5th seed, not playing championship weekend, hosting a team they will be a double-digit favorite against, whether it be the G5 representative or, you know, the runner-up in the Big 12, whatever it may be. Then they're going to face, in that 5-4 game on a neutral, the weakest of the power, the weakest conference champion, which in theory could be Boise State, or it could be the Big 12 champion. And
or
then
could be Army.
Could be. Yeah, I said G5 champion. The 5 seed is pretty fascinating too, because your path is home game and then weakest conference champion that gets a bye on New Year's Day.
Well, then we also run into a scenario, right, where let's say Ohio State loses to Penn State this weekend. The Buckeyes are still in the playoff as a 2-loss team. Like, they're not going to keep this team out because dollar signs matter, right? So all of a sudden, what, do you have an Ohio State team that's like a 10 seed?
I know.
Or an 11 seed, something outrageous like that.
And they have the second shortest odds to win the title right now.
Where Ryan Day sucks, but the talent on the team is incredible. So, I mean, it's really going to be fascinating to see what happens here, because I think we're at the point now where you're getting 3 Big Ten teams and you're getting 3 SEC teams no matter what.
Yes, and yeah, I think Penn State is pretty comfortable where they are at. Ohio State still has Penn State this weekend and Indiana, which, hey, give props to the Hoosiers who continue to cover comfortably, even without Curtis Rourke over the weekend. But yeah, you look at the odds board right now, Oregon plus 475. Do they win the Big Ten? They could be in a weird spot where if they lose to, let's say, Ohio State, then you've got a quick turnaround 2 weeks later where you're probably the 5 seed, but you're playing at Austin, maybe in a rematch against Boise State there to close it out. So, yeah, man, it's really interesting with the year, with the expanded playoff. I think there's going to be some wackiness. I think the bracket is going to be quite telling. And, you know, next Tuesday night, it's a very important night because the college football playoff rankings come out and Maction starts. Yes. That is why next Tuesday is so important. Maction and the college football playoff rankings do come out. I want to have a discussion real quick, though, about the G5 odds. The team to make the college football playoff out of the group of 5. Boise State, after their win on Friday night, a game I was in attendance at, against UNLV. Kind of a clunky game. Felt like UNLV had their opportunities to win that game. Boise State is now minus $2 to make the college football playoff. Tulane is plus 550. Memphis plus 650. Army 15-1. They dropped down from last week when they were 12-1. UL Lafayette, Louisiana, who plays on Tuesday night, depending on when you're listening to this, they're 15-1. UNLV dropped from 7-1 down to 25-1. Navy dropped from 15-1 down to 25-1. And I don't even know why I listed it, but Liberty's 500-1 after their loss to Kennesaw State. Shouts to the Owls. Is there any team outside of Boise, Adam, that is worth a look to make the college football playoff? Remember, in order to represent the group of five, you have to win your championship. So could UNLV, in theory, go on the road to the Smurf Turf in December and get a win? Now, the wrinkle in that, I'll just say this. Colorado State, who I do not think is a very good football team, their schedule is pretty manageable, and they haven't lost a Mountain West game yet. At Nevada this weekend, bye week, home to Wyoming, at Fresno State, home to Utah State. It's not the craziest thing in the world for Colorado State to potentially, not saying likely, but potentially run the table. If that's the case, Boise State will beat them by 40 in the Mountain West Championship.
Yeah, and that's why I think Boise State at minus 200 is really the only way to look here. I mean, first of all, they're a massive favorite in the remaining five games. The Mountain West is not good. Oregon State is, they're struggling, man. I mean, they're not a Mountain West team by definition, but they're playing a Mountain West schedule. They're struggling. They benched their quarterback last week. They have all kinds of stuff going on that they're just not a very good football team. Plus, that game is on the Smurf Turf. So, I mean, Boise State's the only way that you can look, right? Because I think the only team in this conference capable of beating them is UNLV. And now UNLV is in a pretty tricky spot to even get back to the conference championship game. Now, that being said, I mean, Colorado State will be a dog in their game against Fresno State, so they will have to pull an upset there. And while San Diego State's looking a little bit better, they're not going to come into Vegas and beat the Rebels. So the Rebels should run the table the rest of the way, should be in that conference championship game. But, you know, again, they need to make sure somebody beats Colorado State, which should happen. But look, I mean, you know, Boise State is going to win out the regular season. Like, I would be completely stunned if we get a Kennesaw State Liberty situation with them in any of their remaining games. And then beyond that, you know, you're still asking, you know, some of these teams to run the table in their own respective conferences to even have a chance. So, yeah, I mean, I think minus 200 at this point, it's basically a question of, you know, what's the Boise State UNLV number when they have the rematch? And is the money line higher than minus 200? And if so, then there's value right now on the Broncos.
Broncos minus $2 to win the Mountain West. So it's no surprise that it's minus $2 to also make the playoff, because if you win that game, Boise State is going to make the college football playoff. They have one loss on the road to now the number one team in the country in Oregon by three. Now, I said this on Saturday on the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show, which, by the way, you should listen to each and every Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern on Masson in D.C., Nesson Plus in New England, and on that app that Mr. Burke was talking about, which you get free until the middle of November. But I was there in attendance, and I thought Barry Odom and that defense for UNLV did a pretty darn good job on Ashton Jeanty. And the odds sort of reflect it. And I'm not a hot take guy, but I just know the way voters vote for the Heisman Trophy. I think Ashton Jeanty lost the Heisman Trophy on Friday night. And whether that's fair or not, he played well, still ran for over 100 yards, but I think he needed to go for like 250 in a game like that against what is, you know, going to be their second most challenging game of the season. He had 33 carries for 128 yards and a touchdown. He was very good. He also got a little banged up. I think he hurt his elbow a little bit there against UNLV. And I know, I'm sure Boise State fans, I saw the banners, the Heisman with the number two in there. I get it. You're excited for him, but you mentioned it. These are the remaining games: San Diego State, Nevada, San Jose State, Wyoming, Oregon State. Nothing there is moving the needle. when Travis Hunter had another monster game for Colorado this past weekend. Dylan Gabriel is the quarterback of the number one team in the country. And then Cam Ward has some opportunities out there still to win this award. So look, history has told us that a quarterback from a playoff team is more than likely going to win this award. Yes, Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams the past 2 years, but those are high profile teams. So I don't think Ashton Gentry is going to win the Heisman Trophy. I was texting with Dustin Sweetelson, producer extraordinaire, and he was asking, hey, do you think Ashton Gentry's worth a good bet, a bet now? And I don't think so. So he has dropped Gentry from, he was 2-1 to win the Heisman at BetMGM last week. He's now plus 450. At Circa, he was plus 250. He's down to 5-1. He now has the fourth longest odds to win the Heisman Trophy. So is it impossible? No. But I just think that Ashton Gentry hurt his Heisman candidacy for not being superhuman. Fair or not, I just think that's the way it crumbles down to, where Dylan Gabriel, Cam Ward, and now Travis Hunter coming back and having the performance that he did over the weekend against Cincinnati. I think it's more kind of like a 3.5-man race now to win the Heisman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Gentry can win it for the simple fact that now you got through that game, right? You got through that game against UNLV and you won, and Gentry was pretty pedestrian. His longest carry was only 16 yards in that game. But now you're looking at the discussion that we just had, right? Is Ashton Gentry winning the Heisman Trophy an awesome thing for the program, an awesome thing for him as an individual? Absolutely. But now you are in the driver's seat to make the college football playoff. And you can probably navigate the regular season if something happens to Gentry. You have no chance in hell in the playoff, probably overall, but especially not if you don't have Gentry. So to me, this is a situation where he's going to play just the first half in at least a couple of these games going forward. And he was already in a position where I think he had to break Barry Sanders' record to even have a shot at winning the Heisman because of the conference that he's in, because of the biases against these bad defenses that he's playing. That ain't going to happen now, because why would you put him at risk? He's not going to play the fourth quarter in any of these remaining games, I don't think, or at least he shouldn't if the team plays up to their capability in the first three. So, yeah, I mean, now I'm not saying you're taking for granted that you're going to make the college football playoff, but you damn well want that kid healthy when you play either Colorado State or UNLV down the line.
I want to get to Travis Hunter, because I have been skeptical of him winning the Heisman Trophy this year. One, because I didn't know how many games Colorado would win. Two, he got banged up a couple weeks ago. Well, he returned to the field this past weekend, and this is what he did against Cincinnati. 132 snaps, all 61 on defense, 68 of 71 on offense, 153 receiving yards, his fifth 100-yard receiving performance this season. Four pass breakups, career high, two touchdowns. That courtesy of Adam Rittenberg. Appreciate the tweet there on ESPN. So, look, Travis Hunter last week had actually dropped as low as 20-1 at DraftKings to win the Heisman Trophy. And right now, Circa has put Travis Hunter as the favorite at plus 225. Most other shops have him around that 3-1 range. Look, Dylan Gabriel is going to continue to put up pretty good numbers. Oregon is, in my opinion, not going to be really tested again until the Big Ten championship game, where they more than likely will face Ohio State or Penn State in that Big Ten championship, and a big opportunity there for him to win that. Cam Ward, they play Duke this week. We'll get into that game on the other side of the break, but they should win that game pretty comfortably. I don't anticipate many speed bumps from Miami until the ACC championship. And then Travis Hunter, more than likely, Adam, Colorado isn't going to make the Big 12 championship, even if they win out because of the loss to Kansas State. But crazier things have happened. Travis Hunter and Colorado going 10-2, and he continues to put up those numbers. I'm starting to come around on the thought of him being the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, I could certainly see it. And look, I mean, you know, credit to Colorado. You know, I mean, I know we talked earlier on in the season after they didn't play well against Nebraska, you know, like what is going to happen with this team going forward here? But they've played really, really well in the Big 12. I think we're seeing a couple of things here. I mean, I know that they've played, you know, Arizona, a team that they played all the time anyway, but the Big 12 is not physical. And so you're in a position where, you know, the fact that they don't have a good offensive line, or really a good defensive line for that matter, isn't really that big of a factor in this conference. Also, they have zero running game to speak of whatsoever. So Hunter's getting a lot of looks, getting a lot of touches, getting a lot of targets. And also, I mean, you know, it makes sense for Deion to make his kid look good, where Shador is having a really, really good season. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's also one of those things where it's like, look, I mean, who's doing this in college football? I mean, it's been a long time.
And in Charles
to Woodson, this degree, it's never really
it's
been
never done. Happened in to this degree. Maybe in the, you know, in the 40s when, you know, Red Smith out there, you know, coming from the cornfields, had to play both sides of the field, running the wing tee and then, you know, being a defensive end or something like that. But no, we've never seen anything like this. And
I mean, Chris Gamble played both ways, but not to this degree.
Right. And the fact that he sat out three plays on Saturday night, now they get a bye week, home stretch for them. And the schedule's manageable. And you got to ask yourself, what does he have to do in the next four games in order to continue to emerge as the Heisman Trophy winner? And I always come back to this. If I had a Heisman vote, obviously I would watch all the games, which I know is kind of a crazy concept. But, you know, Travis Hunter would probably be number one for me right now. But I bet this, and I have yet to bet Travis Hunter, and I do have a Dylan Gabriel bet. We talked about it a couple weeks ago on the pod. He dropped to 18-1 as they were kind of working their way through things. And lo and behold, they beat Ohio State. And now he's the betting favorite at three of the four shops that I mentioned, BetMGM, FanDuel, and DraftKings. So, you know, for Oregon, they go on the road to Michigan this week. They're a 14.5, 15-point favorite. And CBS, 3:30 Eastern, they should put up big numbers there. Maryland, Wisconsin, Washington, Oregon, if they're not 12-0, it's a stunner going into the Big Ten championship game. And that, you could argue, is going to be the biggest championship game of championship weekend, where you've got an opportunity, like last year with Bo Nix, where the quarterback of the best team in the country has a chance to kind of solidify and win the award. So we'll see how it all plays out. But Travis Hunter is pretty incredible.
I just think, you know, see, this is going to be really interesting, right? Because Gabriel and the Ducks are going to go undefeated in the regular season. Who knows what happens in the Big Ten championship game? I think they beat Penn State. I think there's a decent chance Ohio State gets revenge, right?
I agree.
Gabriel right now, 18 passing touchdowns, 23 total touchdowns. When you look at quarterback stats to win the Heisman, the last three, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Bryce Young, 40, 42, 47 touchdown passes. 2019, Joe Burrow had 60, which is just an outrageous number. Kyler Murray, 42. Baker Mayfield, 43. Lamar Jackson, 30. But obviously, Lamar Jackson was also such a dynamic runner that, yeah, he had 30 passing touchdowns, but he had 21 rushing touchdowns. Or 18, I think it was. Yeah, it was 18 in his Heisman season. So, you know, like, we're talking about 40-plus, 50-plus total touchdowns. Gabriel has 23 with four games left to play, and then the Big Ten championship game. So he's not on par to put up numbers with quarterbacks that have won the award in the past. So even if they run the table, and they should, at least until the Big Ten championship game, and then we'll see what happens there, I think this is an example of why the odds-making team at Circa is so sharp, that Travis Hunter is doing something we've never seen before. Dylan Gabriel is putting up a good quarterback season on a great team. And so I think the voters are going to cross compare with what past champions have done. So the only wild card to me, honestly, is Cam Ward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is Miami able to continue living with a horseshoe up their ass and keep running the table with this thing? Because Ward's numbers are much closer to what you're looking for out of a Heisman Trophy winner, I think. Where he's, you know, six touchdown passes ahead here so far, you know, has three rushing touchdowns. So he's up to 27 total scores. And like, for them to keep winning, he's going to have to keep putting up numbers because the defense just isn't very good. So to me, I think it's Travis Hunter versus Cam Ward more so than Dylan Gabriel, just because the numbers don't stack up to what you would expect a Heisman Trophy quarterback to have.
Yeah. And look, we've seen it before. It all seems to come down to championship weekend, where Caleb Williams, he was banged up, but that one didn't really matter. Last year, Bo Nix gets beaten by Washington. It would have been interesting to see if Oregon had won that game, what the voters would have done. My hunch, and I'll never know the answer, my hunch is Jaden Daniels still would have won the award, but we won't know. But we've got an opportunity, a likely opportunity, where Miami's playing ACC weekend against Clemson, and we've got Oregon playing against Penn State or Ohio State, and then Travis Hunter probably is going to be sitting at home that weekend. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Miami, you look at the schedule, I guess you can't put anything past them, but it's Duke at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. Now, if Haynes King is back for that November 9th showdown against Miami, I think that one could be a tricky one there for the U, but we'll see in a long ways to go.
I still think the Syracuse game is tricky. I know Syracuse looked awful, and Kyle McCord looked so bad. Well, yeah, that's the question, right? Throw?
Jesus.
Does the turnover chain come back for that game?
I mean, this is one of this weekend, and I'm going to get into the other side. I mean, you had SMU win a game -6 in the turnover margin, one of the craziest games I've ever seen. And I had SMU in a money line parlay and was very fortunate and lucky to win that one. Duke, I think, is +10 in the turnover margin the last 2 weeks. It's insane. And then you look at what we saw with Navy turning the ball over 6 times. They hadn't had a turnover since week 1. They were -6 in the turnover margin. It was a pretty wacky week, needless to say, for some of those contests. All right, let's take a quick break. On the other side, I want to hit on some midweek games. Also, the fired coach bump. It worked this past weekend for East Carolina. Will it work for another AAC team this weekend? We'll hit on that. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. 3 episodes each and every week. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Keep those ratings coming. Keep those reviews coming. Saw a couple more trickling in. Much appreciated. It costs you nothing, by the way. Just hit 5 stars. Write, Adam Burke is the man in that description down there, and we get ourselves a little help in those rankings. Let's keep it rolling there. Adam Burke at Skating Tripods on Twitter is with me as always, and we've got some midweek games. We've got some fired coach situations, and I want to start there. Rice fired their head coach over the weekend, and it was a long stretch there for Mike Bloomgren, the former Stanford assistant. I think he'd been the head coach since, 2017? Before he got fired, seven seasons, made a couple of bowl games, but they started 2-6. They lost to UConn over the weekend. So I'm conflicted on this game, Adam, and here's why. Because I look at this contest and I say, fire coach bump. Maybe you're getting Rice on the cheap. But then you're also playing Navy, who's got the unique offense of the hybrid wing tee. They're coming off by far and away their worst performance of the year. And I'm just thinking to myself, is Rice really, after their coach got fired, going to be buttoned up to slow down this Navy offense, which prior to losing to Notre Dame, they had been 5-1 ATS and covering by 14 points per game?
Well, the market seems to think so.
I know. It's down to 11.
I mean, my power rating on this game is 16.5, and it opened in the 13.5 range. And so I kind of thought, okay, this one's probably going to go to 14, maybe head up a little bit. And now we're down to 11. And look, you know, we saw people call it the dead cat bounce, basically, with East Carolina last week. I mean, they put up an offensive showcase in their game.
Temple.
Also, you know, Southern Miss, they fired Will Hall. And last week, they played a James Madison team that they are nowhere near the talent level of. They covered. They lost by 17. They were a 24-point dog. They covered. They only got outgained in that game by, 37 yards? So Southern Miss kind of showed up here, too. A team that is very, very bad and has been very bad for a long period of time. And look, I think, you know, the expectations at Rice have to be pretty difficult. They have to be pretty low. They do have a new university president, and I think that's probably why they're kind of starting over here. But in terms of their academic standards relative to the other programs in the American Athletic Conference, they are much, much higher. So it's a difficult place to win. It's a difficult place to try and have any success whatsoever. Pete Alomar, who was the associate head coach, is going to take over here. There's no reason for Rice to be in this game against Navy. It's very hard to prep for this scheme, as you alluded to, as you mentioned. And now you got to do it without your head coach, with the program in turmoil and transition, guys thinking about where they're going to transfer to, stuff like that. But here's the market with a bad Rice football team betting on them and dragging this number down. That's not to say the market is always right, but when you get a move like this, it does stand out.
It does. No, no doubt. And look, I was on UCF last, and can I, quick PSA, I love the people who are taking their victory laps. And if you bet BYU over the weekend, congratulations. I'll just say, historically, if you're going to bet blindly against market moves, you're probably not going to be a very profitable bettor. It won last weekend. If you were on BYU, I saw a couple people, this is a gift of a line, BYU being an underdog. It was, you know, and props to you if you took said gift. All that said, I have made it, you know, my limited betting career to recognize line moves, respect line moves. I don't get this one, man. I don't get it. Like, is there a body blow theory for Navy coming off the Notre Dame game? Maybe. Got to travel down to Rice. I also think there's a pissed off aspect of Navy here, where this offense had looked like a well-oiled machine, and then their coach flat out said it after the game. The moment was too big for us. They got called out by their coaching staff after they turned the ball over six times. They hadn't lost a fumble since week one, and they lost five fumbles against Notre Dame. So this game really intrigues me, because I want to lay it with Navy, but the line move is definitely spooking me here in this spot.
Well, and look, I mean, did you want to beat Notre Dame? Of course you did. Absolutely. You wanted to. You wanted to maintain that ranking, wanted to maintain whatever small slimmer of hope you had for making the college football playoff. But your goal entering the season as a group of five program is to win your conference. They're back in conference play now. They can still do that. They're still undefeated in conference play. So, yeah, they got humiliated by Notre Dame. But it's very easy in this type of situation to wipe the slate clean and just simply get back to everything that you were doing.
Yeah, I'm actually looking something up real quickly because I was curious how they responded. So in 2019, that was the last time Adam, Notre Dame, and Navy played when both were ranked. The following week, Navy won 35-28 over SMU. So I don't have the point spread of that game, but they did turn around and win the following week. So yeah. And then if this was just a regular team, I would say, yeah, I could see Rice and the, you know, the fired coach boom here, but you're also facing this offense that up until Notre Dame, no one had figured out. And Notre Dame was once again massively aided by the fact that they turned the ball over six times in that game. There was a moment where Blake Horvath literally dropped the football in the end zone and Jalen Steed from Notre Dame just fell on it. So it was, it was a disaster for the midshipmen. All right. One other, actually a bunch of other games I wanted to hit on, but curious. I was trying to find the last time, if ever, Army was a 22.5 point favorite against Air Force. I mean, that is some wild stuff there. You know, we've talked so much about Army and Navy and the success that they've had this year, rightfully so. Air Force has been a disaster from an offensive standpoint. 22.5 point favorite, Adam. Now, Navy did beat Air Force on the road 34-7, and this game is in West Point.
Looks like Navy was a 4-point favorite in that game against SMU, for what it's worth.
So
SMU was ranked at the time.
Yeah, so number 25.
Yeah, and as far as Army, I mean, you know, in the Commander-in-Chief rivalry series, I mean, that's a really, really substantial number, especially when you consider the fact that there might be, what, 12 possessions in this game or something like that? But, you know, look, Air Force is just, I mean, this is a historically bad Air Force team. I know Troy Calhoun had that 1 year. They went, what, 2-10? I think we had that 1 year where they were just atrocious. But this team is just, they're beyond awful. And, you know, it's a really, really big number for a total in the low 40s that I think the total is only going up just because people don't expect Air Force to stop Army at all.
All right, a couple other things we want to hit on. I do want to hit on Ohio State, Penn State before we get out of here, a game certainly that you will be very interested to bet. We have Texas A&M in a situational spot on the road at South Carolina. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, with Wes Reynolds tomorrow on our situational spot podcast. But Vanderbilt, again, is going to be an underdog against Auburn. And I'm wondering, is this going to be the trap? You know, and we've been waiting and wondering when Indiana wouldn't cover. And I went against them 2 weeks ago. That did not work out well. Matt Eumanns tried to go against them this past week with Washington. That also did not work out well. When I look at Vanderbilt, this is pretty fascinating. Diego Pavia as a double-digit underdog, this courtesy of my guy Stuckey. He's 6-0 ATS now and 4-2 against the spread. Last year, they beat Auburn outright at New Mexico State. This year, Kentucky, Alabama, both won those games as double-digit dogs, Virginia Tech as well. And then Missouri and Texas, lost, did not cover. Vanderbilt this year, 5-0 ATS as an underdog. And now they are once again an underdog. And if I had to guess, Adam, they will be a pretty popular underdog this week. Double checking just what they are as an underdog against the spread. 5-0, covering by 19.3 points per game this year.
I just want to go back to this because I looked it up in the Killer Sports database. So last year, Air Force was a 17.5 point favorite against Army.
Oh my God.
In a neutral setting. 17.5, 18.5, depending on which book you cite.
Army won that game, correct?
As the closing. Army won that game outright by 20. The biggest favorite role for Army, dating back to 1989, which is as far as the Killer Sports database goes back, Army was a 6-point favorite at home against Air Force in 2018. And in fact, they've only been favored three times, dating back to 89. So, I mean, you want to talk about historical outliers.
So, this is a flip of 40 points.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, 17.5, 18.5 point favorite for
Air Force.
Do we
dare take Air Force?
Oh, God. Now that I think about it, I think subconsciously I was bringing this up to see if you would be willing to take Air Force.
Oh, my God.
I know your style.
Wait until Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I might have to bring out a hazmat suit and go on set there at the D. My God, a 40-point swing?
It's insane. I'm actually surprised our pal Brad Powers hasn't tweeted this. That's usually something that he's completely on top of. Maybe he has.
Calling him out. Calling you out, Brad.
I mean, he's always on top of those.
By the way, shouts to Brad. He went head-to-head with Eumanns last week and JVT and got the best of it. Boise State was his best bet of the week, so... Brad got the victory there.
So to what you were asking about here with Vanderbilt and Auburn, is there a more perplexing team in the nation this year than Kentucky? Like, I just, week in and week out, I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to get from Kentucky. And then in last week's game, where, you know, Kentucky historically just such a really strong defensive team in so many ways. They gave up 500 yards to Auburn. So Auburn's offense coming out of nowhere, they ran for 328 yards in that game. Now they're laying 6.5 against Vanderbilt, who, as you mentioned, just a phenomenal underdog this season. Like, I mean, I'm not interested in laying the favorite price with Auburn, but I'm kind of more interested in what in the hell is Kentucky this season, where they're getting a pretty sizable number here against Tennessee in that rivalry there, Rocky Top, where the last 3 weeks have all been ugly for Kentucky, and yet they also have a win over Ole Miss and came very close to beating Georgia.
All right, let's get out of here, Adam, with Penn State, Ohio State. This is not a whiteout game, much to my chagrin, and maybe much to the delight of Ohio State fans who have, what year was that, 2015?
All of them.
The whiteout game where
all of
Ohio
them are
State
way
went.
Too close in yeah. Happy Valley.
All right. So right now, Ohio State, a 3.5-point favorite. We don't know the status of Drew Aller, whether or not he will be playing in this game. Ohio State has their own concerns on the offensive line. You're the Ohio State guy here on this podcast. You love your head coach, Ryan Day. You think he's the best. you want to spend Christmas with him. What do you make of this number? Total 46. Once again, noon kickoff for this one between Penn State and Ohio State, a top five showdown in Happy Valley.
Well, it's ironic, right? Because James Franklin can't win a big game and Ryan Day can't beat a top five team. So somebody has to win this game, I guess. So, you know, one of those narratives is going to be quieted a little bit here. Ohio State's offensive line issues scare the hell out of me in this game because, you know, while Will Howard is a really, really good player, an experienced player, a guy who I think can use his legs way more than they've used them so far this season. He only has 41 carries for 91 yards on the year. I know you have Judkins and Henderson, who are two phenomenal running backs that are going to play in the NFL, but like, there's got to be a game, and I thought there'd be more of this with Chip Kelly. There's got to be a game where you use Will Howard's legs more. Is this the one simply out of necessity because the offensive line is in shambles with the injuries that they've had? I could see that being a thing. Also, Ohio State's playing way too much side-to-side offense. You have Jeremiah Smith. You have Emeka Egbuka. You have Carnell Tate. They've not used Brandon Innes really at all. Like, you can go downfield. You have the talent to be able to go downfield. Do you have the protection to do it? Well, that's another story. But they're just throwing everything side to side. They're playing this, you know, horizontal game instead of vertical game. I don't know what the hell is going on here. I have no faith in Ryan Day whatsoever. I lean Penn State, but I have no faith in James Franklin in a game of this magnitude either, because there's always some special team screw up that he has. You think about the blocked punt a few years ago where Penn State had that game in hand. Ohio State gets the blocked punt and, you know, they kind of figure out a way. But I know that this game is going to piss me off watching it. That's all I know for sure.
Regarding Drew Aller's status on Monday, James Franklin said, quote, "It's too early to tell at this point, but he's played enough football that I think that decision will go all the way up to game time." Bo Prabula, easy for me to say, will be the man who steps in. I was thinking of the 2016 game where Penn State outscored Ohio State 17-0 in the fourth quarter. Was that the game that they had the blocked field goal, if I remember correctly?
I believe so. I try to eradicate all of those things from my mind. It's such a house of horrors for Ohio State. They just play games that are way too close
for
comfort.
What about the under in this game? Like, if you've got an Ohio State team that has no left tackle, you've got a Penn State team that I would imagine is probably going to want to try to play keep away. Ohio State went over the total. I don't see Penn State in the same breath as an Oregon. I think Penn State will pride itself much more defensively. And you're looking at the betting market sitting right now at 46. Hasn't moved a ton. 47 is a key number. There's a 46.5 out there. I think if anything, I'd look under in this spot. So maybe that's something I'll keep an eye on from a total standpoint. My track record betting totals is less than stellar. All right.
It was 2017 with the blocked punt. You and I were both kind of in the same thought process there.
Okay.
But it was 2017. Saquon Barkley opened the game running back to kick for a touchdown. And then Denzel Ward had the punt block when Ohio State was down 15 early in the fourth quarter. And then they found a way to come back and win 39-38. That's the game that we both had in mind. And I can't believe that game was 7 years ago.
If I bet the under, it's going to be 10-10 going into the fourth quarter. And the final score will be 24-23. That's my prediction. If I bet under 46,
I don't hate the under. I don't hate that at all.
Penn State's strength is their defense and Ohio State's weakness is their offensive line. Right. So
yep.
That would be the way that I would early look here. I don't know if we, because of the high profile nature of this game, get some over money coming into the market. Midweek games. Make sure you check out Adam's write-ups on vsin.com. 3 games on Tuesday, 2 on Wednesday. Halloween, we have one game, Tulane and Charlotte. And then Friday night, we've got three games as well, including Boise State, a game I believe Derek Stevens and his crew will be headed up to the Smurf Turf. So I'm sure they'll enjoy themselves up there in Boise. Adam, any parting words before we get out of here?
Nope, I'm good. Get your college basketball guide.
Get your college basketball guide. Get your new app as well. It's free until when, Adam? November what?
I believe 25th.
All right. So get that. We've still got the Equinox special going on. Head on over to vsin.com for everything for the NFL World Series, which may or may not end tonight, and all the NBA action that's going on. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Back tomorrow with Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. This is the vsin College Football Betting Podcast.